And welcome back to our Delaware Valley. I'm Laura Lewis, and with us today, Sherry Hope Culver. She is Associate Professor for the Klein College of Media and Communication, the Department of Media Studies and Production at Temple University. She is also the Director for the Center for Media and Information Literacy, and you're the Vice Chair of the UNESCO Global Alliance on Partnership for Media and Information Literacy. Did that sum it up?
That is a mouthful. Yes, that pretty much summed it up. See you later.
Okay. I'd love to see your business card.
Yeah, I don't even bother putting all of those things on the business card. Too much information.
Oh, but well, that's what we're talking about, though, today. Information in 2020. And so I don't even know how to begin this conversation. But since you are the well, we're talking about media literacy today. And it can't be any more important than now with medical, political, racial tension, you name it. And this is the most important time now for media literacy. So let's start in with the actual definition of what is that.
So I'll give you two definitions for it. I'll give you the sort of scholarly definition for it, and then I'll tell you how I'll explain it to like my friends and, you know, relatives. So the scholarly definition is the ability to access, analyze, evaluate, create, and then act using all forms of communication. But the way more conversationally that I would explain it is, you know, when I went to school and I was in elementary school way back, teachers could not imagine letting me get out of elementary school without knowing how to read and write. Right? That would be the core things I need to know how to do. And today we need, all of us need the skills to be able to read and write in all the ways that we can read and write today. So it's not enough to be able to pick up your pen or your pencil or typewriter even, or a computer or your phone, right? You need to be able to do all of those things. And you need to be able to communicate in PowerPoint. You need to know how to upload a video on YouTube. You need to know how to analyze the content that's being shown to us about all of these racial tensions that are going on right now and all the time. So being able to understand and utilize and think about the way media influences you is at the core of media literacy.
You just added to media things I wouldn't have considered. You added in Zoom and you added in PowerPoint.
Yeah.
I mean, when I was in school too, media was radio, television, and print.
That's because we're very old. That's
not.
Or I'll speak for myself.
not really that old. I mean, we may not have used tablets when we were in grade school, but by the time we were in college, we were already using that. And obviously, we're of an age where we use it at work as well. But to include what we consider to be social media in there too, like Zoom, and business media like a PowerPoint or a LinkedIn, et cetera, like that. So, what is media?
Well, think about all of the ways in which you communicate information to someone else other than you talking, right? So the fact is that when you mediate your language, when you take what's in your brain, you think about it, and you have to conform it to some other technology or other method that you're going to share that information with someone. The technology itself, I mean, Marshall McLuhan famously said many, many decades ago, the medium is the message. And that meant that the very form that the media takes influences the way we communicate. So there's the technology aspect of it. And then there is how you as a person change what you're going to say depending on where and how you say it. So not only how I talk to you in person versus how I talk to you on a radio show, but how I talk to you in a text message and how I talk to you in my email. And all of that requires different critical thinking skills, which to me are all media literacy skills.
I had never actually been able to understand McLuhan until just now when you said that, when he's talking it. You know, you did. You
just Yay!
The medium is the message. But that is true. When we look back to remember, well, I don't remember this one, but Nixon Kennedy, because television, the way it reflected Nixon, it swayed voters. And right. and as a result, people tailored what they were saying, their appearance, everything about their message to accommodate the medium itself.
Well, and you're referring to, you know, Nixon and Kennedy, let's say, going back into the 60s and the 70s. But with every succeeding year, decade to that, we've gotten, and politicians have gotten, smarter about how to use the media. There's more research about what affects us with the media. So someone who wants to craft a message to have a certain reaction has history they can look to about what worked and what didn't. And so the ability to be manipulated is really strong because people are good at doing these things.
Let's start off then. Let's go back to what you said when I asked you to define media literacy. And the first one was accessibility. And that's going to play on something else that we talked about, generational differences. And we are shutting out whole communities, whole populations today from discussion, from information about health, telemedicine now. We're talking about access. And again, it's not even just generational where you have no knowledge of it. It's also a money situation, an economic problem for so many who don't have access to school and, again, to telemedine. And we're discovering that when COVID shut down our school system in Philadelphia and many students lacked first the device and then access if they had one.
Well, this is such an, such a timely conversation. I mean, if you talk to media literacy practitioners, media literacy educators, media literacy advocates before COVID, the same issues would have been there. But COVID really brought a visibility to these issues in a very guttural, personal, way in that you send all of your students off to be learning from home. And the idea that someone did not have access to the internet before might have seemed like a convenience, but now it's a critical piece of their education. So it's an interesting process that the actual field of media literacy over the years has shifted to a conversation where access to media is really a basic democratic need, a basic democratic right. To be a functioning citizen today, you need access to media, and I would say media literacy skills, which go beyond just access. So to register to vote, to be able to get a driver's license, to be able to do any kind of research about, you mentioned healthcare, just anything we would talk about, you need access to information, and that information is online. So citizens need online access as a basic human right.
I was about to ask you about that because I can remember, I don't personally remember, but reading about when the telephone came out and it became an entitlement that every household should have the telephone. It was a basic entitlement to participate in social life and political, et cetera, go on and on health care, emergency.
But it's interesting that you bring up the phone because the telephone – if we probably don't look at our bills this way anymore, but phone communication and telephones are regarded as a utility. So there's a regulation of the phone, of the sort of original phone industry, telephone industry, because it was seen as a necessity. And so the government had they can't just charge whatever they want. There's certain regulations to the way that can be shaped, even though it's a for-profit company. There's been a tremendous battle in discussions around the internet that should be seen as a utility as well. It is not now. It is not seen that way. And so should a internet service provider, and we have one of the biggest in the world in our backyard in Philadelphia, should they decide that they wanted to dramatically raise rates, let's say. And I don't think this is going to happen, but let's just say it's already expensive enough, but let's just say they did. That without any kind of government regulation or seeing it as that utility, they can operate as a for-profit company without those regs. Now, there certainly are other regulations they have to abide by, but the concept of seeing media and seeing specifically online, getting onto the internet as a need for everyone gives the government the possibility of seeing it as a utility and regulating it in a different way. And so there's lots of battles about that on all sides.
So why hasn't the government gotten involved other than the FCC and poking in with the access and the speed and et cetera? Why hasn't it provided access to all? There are whole areas of the country that have spotty or no service as of now.
Well, it's funny the way you just said that. You said sort of, I think what you were saying is, why hasn't the government, right? Why hasn't the government done that? Dot, dot, dot. Well, these are private companies. I mean, they're public companies, but they're not government companies. So the government can regulate, they can create regulations and laws to impact how those companies run. But other than that, these are companies that can run the way they and their stockholders want them to run. So, you know, Comcast and others have programs. Internet Essentials is one of them, the programs that try to create low-cost options for people to get on the internet. But for some people, even that is beyond what they really could afford. So you're getting at the crux of like, well, why wouldn't they? Well, you know, when you're unsure, as I say to my students all the time, when you don't know the answer to a question, the answer is always money. You can always say that is the answer, and you're almost always right. You know, to provide internet access for everyone universally means someone, government or private industry, is going to have to make an investment in doing that and not make money on it. And tell me any business that wants to do that. So it's a challenge. And when I think what's happening with COVID and the need for education online is helping to show some percentage of people that didn't understand why it was a necessity, that it is a necessity. And that's a good thing.
Now, my next question was going to wander towards going back to accessibility. What was UNESCO's interest in this? And do you want to explain? Because I know that they actually declared a literacy week for world information, mm-hmm. for engagement, information and engagement. What is the global view of the internet and media in general?
Well, going back to my comment about online access being a basic democratic right. So UNESCO is the United Nations Education, Scientific, and Cultural Organization. So it's an arm of the United Nations that that deals mostly with the education community, scientific and cultural community, and seeds different collaborations for people to work together. And I'm part of one that is a group of universities and then a group of organizations that deal with media and information literacy. So in the global field, it's referred to usually as MIL, media and information literacy. In the US, we tend to separate them. Information literacy would be the library side of it, a little more of a general information view. So clearly there are major overlaps of those things, and that's why UNESCO created it as a composite term, and that's why the name of the center I run at the university is the Center for Media and Information Literacy. So they are recognizing that, so if they're an organization whose goal is about, helping the world to get along more better and using these educational and scientific and cultural organizations to get there, they're recognizing the need for the MIL skill globally. And there's been a field doing this for several decades, but it's taken a while and for it to get, let's say, to everyone as something that, you know, even when I first started working in media literacy, let's say in the late 80s, early 90s, if I would say to somebody, I'm involved with media literacy, they would say, what's that? Now, I'm much, much less likely to get that. And usually, if somebody's unsure, I can say, do you know the conversations that are happening about fake news? Ah, yes, I do. Everybody knows those. Well, okay, let's go from there. Let's start there. That's an issue of media literacy. And then you can help people understand it. So there are global issues of information access from the United Nations standpoint that have to do with people's basic universal rights as humans. These are human rights, being able to get access to information that you need to live a safe and productive life.
Yeah. You know what? We're close up to the halfway mark, where I always like to say that this is our Delaware Valley. I'm Laura Lewis, and with us today, Sherry Hope Culver, Associate Professor at the Klein College of Media and Communications for the Department of Media Studies and Production at Temple University. She's also the director for the Center for Media and Information Literacy, which she just alluded to, and vice chair of the UNESCO Global Alliance on Partnerships for Media and Information Literacy. And if you'd like more information, the center itself, which does have some amazing resources that we have to get into because they pertain to what we are talking about. It is centermil.org. That is centermil.org. And that will get you to the Temple University site. And she has her own website, sherryhopeculver.com, for all of her varied involvements in media and information literacy. I find it amusing that you said that the internet is a great tool towards global understanding, et cetera, when nothing has been more divisive here in the United States than the internet. And we've created almost, and like I was thinking about this morning, cult of personalities. Benign to malignant, and everyone from the president to the Kardashians to your Gwyneth Paltrows and Goop.
Mm-hmm.
We have so much information, and so, well, I don't want to say information. We have so much material flung at us. Not all of it would I characterize as information. We have words flung at us. And understanding and being able to parse and sort through it is part of all of this mess.
And that's the core of a media literacy skill right there.
There you go. Is it something that we can be taught? Or is it the first shiny thing we see, we glom onto, and we fall into camps?
Well, I mean, it's both, right? I mean, you know, sometimes people will say to me, oh, you deal with media literacy all the time. You must be so media literate. And my answer to that always is, well, it's a muscle I work on every single day. I've been known to, read information that I later found out was false. I've been known to binge watch a bunch of TV shows on a Saturday. Like I'm a media consumer myself, and I enjoy media. And, you know, as with so many things in life, there's wonderful aspects of it, and there are really scary or dangerous aspects of it. And I would not want to take the entire media industry or social media industry and characterize it as anything terrible. I don't feel like that at all. In fact, I think if there was ever a time that I'm grateful for social media, it's during my time of quarantine. The ability for me to connect with others in deep personal ways, you know, as close to face-to-face as I can have since I can't have face-to-face, I feel that's been a gift. And people have rekindled all sorts of relationships by being able to connect through Zoom or any number of other ways, through texting or whatever it might be. So that's wonderful. But it's also highly influential, and it is shaped, right? The message is shaped. And many of us have very bad media habits where we consume like we consume candy, like we just munch, or snacks, maybe is a better way to say that. Like it's very snackable. It's in little bites. We just take it. We don't really think a lot about it. We want a little more, we want a little less. It's all there for us whenever we want it, Kardashian or otherwise. But every time you do that, you know, if I were going to try to sort of narrow all of it down to actionable moments, it's really getting somebody, media literacy is the skill to think first, right? It's the skill. It's not that I don't want you to go on social media. Of course I want you to go on social media. But before you retweet, share, post something, add a picture, whatever, I just want you to take a beat and think about what you're doing. Think about the influence. Think about the messaging. We have to be smarter about the messages that we put out. We are all media creators now. We have to think about messages we put out as well as the messages that we consume. So it's developing that skill. It's not disengaging with media as a rule, but it might be disengaging with media as, well, you know what? Today I was on enough. You know, it's funny. I was on TikTok last week, and which we could probably do an entire show about. And I was on TikTok and I was scrolling and laughing at things I was watching. And at one point, and I'd probably been on for, I don't know, a half an hour or something. And a little within the TikTok scroll, a message came up, a person message that obviously TikTok themselves created, that said, don't you think you've been watching TikTok for a little bit of, for a long enough time? Why don't you take a break? And I had to laugh because they're so sure I'm going to come back that they're not even worried about sending me away and telling me to take a break, which is probably true. But this idea of self-monitoring, right, that I need to know, okay, I did that for a while. Time to take a break and do something else. And what did I not see by watching that? You know, in a moment of racial tension, the really important question to ask all the time is, what faces am I not seeing? What messages am I not seeing? What am I seeing, but what am I not seeing? Getting in the habit of asking what is not there. It's a really strong media literacy question.
The immediacy of it, and that it isn't self-checked, that there isn't anything that checks it. It's like a whisper campaign. And it passes on information so quickly that we can act without really understanding what we're reading or knowing the truth behind it. How many times have, let's go with a dead celebrity. Oh, Chuck Norris died again. Posts about it. And you go, and you quickly check Wikipedia and he says, is an actor. And you go, no.
Right.
It's like the drumbeats. It's like a whisper. It's gossip over fences and it spreads. And it can affect and influence what we do without any checks and balances. And that is a terrifying thing today.
Right. We need to have these. So, I mean, this is a conversation that, it's great that we're having it. And I hope that adults are thinking about these things. But this is a conversation that needs to happen with people from the earliest age. If you are old enough to use media, you are old enough to start developing your media literacy skills. And so in the same way that we teach kids at a very young age, as soon as they start eating, we say things to them like, don't pick up that candy bar until you've had your dinner. You know, you don't get dessert unless you eat dinner, or you've had too many snacks today, or you can have a handful of chips, but not the. We teach nutrition. We teach how to eat so that you are not hopefully gorging on things, but you're making good decisions for yourself. And we struggle with it, but we know that's the goal and we aim for that. We need to be having that same conversation with media at the earliest ages with children and shape that to what developmentally is appropriate. And all the way, from cradle to grave, as they say, we need to be having those conversations so that we're developing these skills. I think recognizing, like you and I having this conversation, even recognizing the influence, recognizing that sometimes you might see something. Let me give you a good example. I received an email the other day from a colleague, and in that email, he was trying to describe something to me, and he included a graphic image, really cool infographic, and it has to do with media, and I really liked it. I'd like to post it. Now, this is somebody who is a professor at another university. There was no source there. I don't know where this thing came from. It had some data in it, percentages of this and that. No source, no nothing. And I wrote back to him and I said, I emailed back. I said, I would really like to share this with some other folks on social media. Can you tell me where you got it? And he wrote back and said, I don't know. And I had to shake my head. What are you doing sharing this? You're a professor. You should not be sharing this with that. And this was nobody from Temple University, I just want to say, but you should not be sharing this as real information if you don't even know where it came from.
He would never have done that in paper. Would never have done that on paper.
Basic questions. I just think we have to be asking basic questions. Where, Twitter and Facebook know, because they are tracking everything we do, they know that people retweet and share the high percentage of things that are retweeted and shared. People never even click through to read. So you scroll through something, you see something a friend posts or somebody you follow is posting, say, well, that looks interesting. And that headline really grabs you and you connect with the headline. It says something that you connect to and boom, we retweet or we reshare. Well, there's a good first step. Don't do that unless you take a pause and look at it. Just look at it. Decide that you like it. Decide that the person actually said something you agree with. You know, there's a term of clickbait now where, people write headlines just to make you click on them. If you start sharing, we just have to be more thoughtful about all of this.
Well, your adversaries are studying this to create that clickbait. The agent provocateur in a riot, a political party, makeup companies, clothing companies, shoe companies, food, you name it. Everyone is studying you to create clickbait, to lure you in. So you do have to be so wary. And we are running so tight on time that I want to talk a little bit about, you said that, you know, when we were kids, we were taught reading and writing, and now we should be taught media literacy and information literacy. And towards that, in 4 minutes, how do you teach this critical way of thinking? And what are the resources? Because I alluded earlier to centermill.org. Temple has some wonderful information through your department there. So you want to bring us home and knock us on the side of the head?
I think that, so let's, okay, yeah, it's a complicated question with lots of different possibilities here. So let's just hit a couple important things. A habit that you can, that everybody who's listening at any age can begin to work on is taking a pause. So before you share, before you believe, before you say to somebody, I saw this, I read this, just give a moment of thought to where it came from, who said it, why they might have written that or why they might have developed it. Take a pause and try to think about sources. There's been a lot of recommendations over the last few years for people to, fact check, go to multiple sources for your stories. And I've been a strong vocal person about that being unrealistic. I think it would be great, but it's unrealistic to think that everyone is going to fact check everything. And quite frankly, I'm not the most knowledgeable person about every single topic. I shouldn't be the fact checker. So what I need is to find sources, media industry sources that I trust. So whether that's the New York Times for you or the Wall Street Journal for you or CNN or Fox News or whatever it is for you, spend some time researching that institution. Do they have an editorial board? What kind of experience do they require of their reporters? What do they do before they post a story? Generally, if you can find that information out, then that will lead you to some reputable sources. So that's one thing that you can do. It doesn't take a huge amount of time and will help. When you're thinking about resources to go to, a resource that I really think is great for parents and people dealing with younger children would be Common Sense Media. So Common Sense Media is known initially for providing reviews of movies, and they do movies and television shows and video games. And that's what they were initially known for. But they actually provide great resources for parents, for educators. It's free. 90% of it is free, and you can access it online very easily. So if you're looking for resources, I also think that Common Sense Media is a great resource that you can look to. And I would encourage folks to have these conversations with one another. So if you're a parent, talk to other parents about, like, what do you do when your child comes to you and asks if they can play video games for another 3 hours? What do you do when you try to get the PTA to bring somebody like me in to talk to you about it? Try to make this a topic of conversation, including in the classroom, making sure that it's actually a part of the curriculum. It's hard. Teachers have a very, very hard job at kindergarten through high school, and so many topics that they have to cover. But media is a piece of everything that they teach. They're showing films, they're looking at books, right? These are all media. And that skill of media literacy can be threaded through their education and really is a critical skill, because there's probably nothing they're going to do more the rest of their lives than interact with media. So ask your school about it.
And parting words?
Gosh, I guess my parting words are don't assume that all media is bad. Don't assume that all media is good. Take a moment to think about it and to reflect on your own media use.
Can't say it better. And we are out of time. Here is where I say thank you to Sherry Hope Culver, Associate Professor at the Klein College of Media and Communications at Temple University, Director of the Media and Information Literacy Program there, and Vice Chair of UNESCO's Global Alliance on Partnerships for Media and Information Literacy. Again, for Temple, go to centermill.org, and for Sherry, for information about, well, her own work, and to reach out to her, sherryhopeculver.com, sherryhopeculver.com. Sherry, thank you so much for today.
Thank you for inviting me. It was a pleasure to talk to you.
It was great talking to you. I have to go and review my own habits now. And thanks again. I'm Laura Lewis. This has been Our Delaware Valley.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.